We have water. Now, I hope we are fresh from our constituency period and coming back to the stress and dealing with those issues that we picked up from during our interaction with the people. Please don't ask me who says that one. It's a symbolic kind of an arrangement. We have set ourselves up until Thursday very late to do the work that we are supposed to do. So, welcome back. Feel free. Let's start doing what we are here to do. We normally introduce ourselves, but I think people know us by now. Because these are the people we work with. We have been with the office of the AG. They know that McDee's from Free State, originally from KZN. So we are pretty much fine with those things. We are going to hand over to the office of the AG. And ironically, there is a belief, growing belief, that if you want the real time information about what is happening in the Department of Transport, these are the people to give you real time. I think we should work very hard to change that perception. We must get real information from the department and entities as we want. Because the office of the Auditor General also gets information from them. We may rely on analysis from the office, it's okay. But information, we must be able to work hard to a point where we trust each other, even when it comes to giving information freely. Having said that, let me head over to the chair. Unfortunately, deal with chairs from time to time. Now, Mr. Manu, when he's happy, he's in a good mood. He normally says the difference is that I'm called honorable chair and the other chair is called chair. So, it's not my interpretation, it's somebody's interpretation. So let me hand over to the chair to take us through.
Thank you, honorable chair. Yeah, let me start by greeting the real chair, honorable chair, of the committee, of Portfolio Committee of Transport, honorable members, colleagues from the Transport Department, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Let me start by introducing myself and the team. I know that, you know, most of the members are new. We have been part of this briefing, you know, arrangement for the last couple of years. My name is Solisa Owa. I'm the corporate executive responsible for this portfolio and other provinces. Right next to me, of course, Mr. Polane Sokombela, who is the business executive responsible for this committee, as well as, you know, other portfolios like finance and so forth. And then I've got SM to my right is Marianne Woodcott, who's going to be leading the presentation. And I've got Kumar Neka, who is responsible for the Praza and other entities within the transport portfolio, as well as Mr. Vinay Rabbani, who is responsible for AXA and a few other entities within the transport portfolio. Chair, the purpose of this session really is to share the audit outcomes of the transport portfolio, placing a bit of focus on findings and root causes, with a view of, you know, providing information to the committee as you carry out your responsibility of oversight over the department as well as the entities, and evaluating the performance of the portfolio overall, taking into account the fact that, of course, at the end of this, you have to produce a BRRR. Without further ado, Chair, I will then hand over to, you know, Marianne, who will also, over and above the outcomes, will deal with, you know, the expanded mandate of the Auditor General. And the rest of us, after the presentation, Chair, will be participating in answering questions from the members. And if there is not a chair, then I will hand over to Marianne to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for allowing us the time to take you through our audit outcomes for the year in terms of the transport portfolio. I noted that presentations were actually handed out, so I will take you through those presentations at the moment. Just to revert back, we had a capacity building session earlier last month, and we went through a bit of the information explaining our work, but we will today also just elaborate a little bit more and putting it into actual practice as to what we've actually done, taking that capacity building information. If we look at slide 2, which is basically our reputation promise, here the Auditor General is in terms of the constitutional mandate, and here we actually try to facilitate by our auditing to ensure that you as the portfolio committee members are able to then ensure that there's proper governance and that the entities and the department are then accountable, and that we then actually end up with the proper service delivery, and that the general public can then gain confidence in government as a whole. So that's to paraphrase basically what our reputation promise stands for. In terms of the role of the Auditor General in reporting, is that on slide 3, is we actually look at the work that was actually performed and by the auditee. So we actually look at their financial statements, we look at their performance information, and then we also come and we report so that we can assist you in being able to carry out your oversight role and ensure that then you are able to produce a budgetary review and recommendation report, which is the BRRR. Then if we can turn to slide 4, which is basically the 18-19 audit outcomes, and we can then swing over to page 5 of the presentation. Over here, just a similar slide to what was included in the capacity building one, is the three areas that we actually look at. First of all, we look at the annual financial statements, and we make sure that everything is reported in terms of the accounting framework, which is applicable to the entity and the department, and we make sure that it's fairly presented. So that should mean that if they've incurred irregular expenditure, that they've actually then reported it. If they've had precious and wasteful expenditure, that they've reported it, as well as if they've got a deficit, that they actually report. So we look at it to get reasonable assurance that they have actually reported what has taken place. When we look at the performance information, there again, we look at what they then report. We look at the annual performance plan. We say, what were they supposed to do? What did they do? And then if they didn't achieve it, then they need to provide reasons, and we then look at those reasons as well. So we ensure that what they're reporting is actually correct. Then when we look at compliance with laws and regulations, here we actually ensure that we go through certain laws and regulations. We look at the PSMA, we look at their supply chain management, for example, and then we report accordingly when we find that they have not complied with those laws. So those are the three areas in the audit phase that we would then look at and report in terms of our audit report and our management report. Then if we go over to slide six, this is the type of audit opinions that you can get. And these pertain to a lot that we look at it in terms of the financial side of it. The unqualified, if we look at the green, which is obviously the positive one, which is the unqualified audit opinion with no findings, which is then what the Auditor General then classifies as a clean audit. Over here we have basically, to put it in basic terms, is the entity and the department got it right. So what they've done is they've reported everything correctly, and during our audit process we didn't identify any errors or corrections that needed to be corrected. Then we look at the financially unqualified opinion with findings. Over here they got the financial side right, or that they were able to correct the financials, and then they would have findings, and that would more than likely be in respect of compliance. Then we look at a qualified audit opinion. Over here there were errors that were detected during our audit process, but the entity and the department, whichever it was not able to then correct it. Then an adverse opinion is there were lots of areas, so basically almost every amount then would be incorrect, and then we really cannot express an opinion. Then a disclaimer is also where evidence couldn't be provided to us, and we couldn't actually then verify the amounts that were then given to us. So that's basically the five areas that we would then be looking at later as well when we look at the actual audit outcome. Then if we look at slide number seven, which is just basically a colour code chart, which says the unqualified with no findings, which is then green, unqualified with findings is yellow, qualified with findings is that purple colour, adverse is also a pinky red colour. Then the disclaimer is the colour that's red, and then the outstanding audit, which is blue. You'll note that later I'll take you through it, we do not have any outstanding audits this year. Then if we look at the movement, which is the arrow, if we have an upward arrow that's green, that means there's been an improvement from the previous year. Unchanged is the yellow, and then the red is a regression. So it's basically the colours of our robot. Then if I can take you to the accountability wheel. Over here, basically, what we're looking at is what does accountability actually stand for? So right in the middle, you'll see number one, which says accountability, and we should all be accountable. So if you look at it in terms of the entities in the department, they need to define a target, a goal, an objective, and they need to plan to be able to get to that goal. So they need to decide what needs to be done, which is their number two. Then you go to number three, which is the do. How do we go about it? How do they go about it? They need to ensure, for example, if they want to ensure that there's going to be no fruitless and wasteful expenditure, they need to be a plan, and they need to go into a control environment as to identify what policies and procedures they would be putting into place, which is your internal controls. They would need people within the department to then supervise it and make sure that there's certain levels of approvals that would take place. Then that's the basically the do, then the check. And this is where all your assurance providers then come into it. And when we look at assurance providers, lots of people then would assume that the external auditors are the only people that then provide the assurance. But we also have from within, we have management, senior management, we have the top management as well. You have the internal auditors that then also can provide the assurance and give those early warning signals. And they basically then monitor the process to ensure that whatever was decided up front that they needed to have achieved, that they actually do achieve it. Then from these insurance providers, should there be any errors that have been detected, weaknesses, then they need to act, they need to do something about it. And if it means, for example, in number five, they say that there should be consequence management, then that would need to take place as well. So then after consequence management, that whole process, Then we come to number six, which is the audit outcomes, which we then would have a better outcome once that we've actually audited it. All these processes have really been put into place. And then with a positive audit outcome, we would then get a better impact on the service delivery that should be taking place, and we have a better life for all of South Africa. Then if we go down to the next slide, which is the transport portfolio as a whole, here we've got the 14 audits that are broken up that we then look at. In terms of roads, I do a lot of the roads audits. So I do the department and then a lot of the road audits. Then Kumari is rail. Vinay does a lot of the aviation. And then Maritime, I'm also responsible for SAMHSA. So I think that's just basically to give you an indication that these are all the audits that we carry out, except for the Section 4.3 audit, which is the ACNS, the Air Traffic Navigation Services, that doesn't get done by the Auditor General. Then the interesting slide, I think, is on page slide 10, where we then actually come to the audit outcomes. What we have done this year in for members, for the honourable members that have been part of committees in the past, we normally used to do the 3-year snapshot. Here we're doing the 5-year snapshot so that we can see what happened in the previous 5 years. If you look at it just at face value, you'll see that they, because the green, as we indicated in the previous slide, was the area that said that it was a clean audit, you'll see that we've had basically we've gone from 29% in 14-15, then we went to 36%, 43%, then we went to 21% and 21% again. So you've basically seen a general regression in the people that are getting it right in first time with the clean audit. If you look at the entity again, if we can look at just the bars there, you'll see that cross-border has been able to get it right in from year 2016-17 till 2018-19. But what we always say as the Auditor General, once you get a clean audit, you need to put in mechanisms in place to ensure that we continue getting the clean audit outcomes. And that isn't just necessarily a given. So the entities then need to put measures in place to ensure that we can actually continue achieving it. When we have in the yellow area, these are the areas where they got a unqualified opinion in terms of their audit report in the financial statement, but then they had other things that were wrong, and these were basically to do with compliance. Then the purple is the qualifications, and here you'll note that we have SAMHSA, the only entity this year that remained a qualification. In the previous years, you'll notice that it was SAMHSA, PROSA, and ACNS, and in 2016-17 it was the same. So in terms of ACNS, they were able to move to unqualified with findings, but PROSA regret. So in terms of that, we'll go into more details as to why PROSA has regressed to a disclaimer. And this was due to a number of line items in their financials that were incorrectly, that we couldn't agree the amounts that they had as a result of our audit work. Then, if we can go on to the next slide, which then talks to the credible financial reporting, and I think this is also a very important slide. When you look at the first line, which says the submission of financial statements by the legislative deadline, there we had an improvement, which meant that everybody gave us their financial by the deadline that was required. So that was a improvement from the previous year, where we only had 93%. Then those that were free from errors. So again, if I can explain, that is when we did the audit, we found out that we didn't need to make any audit adjustments to the financial statements. There it was only 43%. But once we've done our audit work and we were able to get through our audit adjustments and the entities and the departments were able to make the corrections, then we ended up with an 86% that their financials were good. If we look at the blue bar there, you'll see that we're talking about 14% that were unable to achieve it. And those are the two that then got the qualifications, which were SAMHSA and PRASA. If we look at the areas there that led to the qualification that we qualified in our audit report, it was irregular expenditure, commitment, receivables, payables, property, plant and equipment. And then for PRASA, it was property, plant and equipment, unspent conditional grants, accumulated surplus, capital subsidies and grants, and water grants, and subsidies received in advance. It was the fair revenue, it was also commitment, it was risk management, irregular and previous and wasteful expenditure, and it was their cash flow. So there were a number of areas. So you'll see that in terms of SAMHSA we had 5 areas, but in terms of PRASA there were a lot more areas that were then that the auditors then could not get evidence that it was then presented. Then if we move over to slide 12, this is now, we're moving off of the financial statements and we're now looking at the performance reporting. So this is where they are reporting on what they were supposed to have done in terms of their annual performance plan. Over here, we didn't then, in terms of the fact that we got all of the financial statements, we haven't included a line here to say that what was the submission rate, but it would have also been 100%. But then in terms of those performance reports that were submitted that had no errors, here we had 50%. So 50% got a grant, 50% didn't. Then we went and we carried out our audit and then the entities and the department made the necessary adjustments and then we ended up with a 71%. If you looked at the 21%, they were had no material findings and they were, because they had actually corrected their findings. So that's where we move from the 50 to the 71. So if we look at how the 71 was made up of, the entities that then were there was your department, your cross-border, road traffic management, driving license, railway safety regulator, port regulator, road traffic infringement agency, South African maritime safety, SACA and AXA were also all part of it. So we ended up with 29 had material findings that resulted in qualifications or disclaimers. And if you look at those areas that had the disclaimers, it was PRASA, RAF, and ACNA. Then if we look at the next slide, which is the disregard for compliance with legislation. Over here again, the green is meaning we got it right as the entity, and the red is saying we need to look at problem areas. So if we look at the written area that says what were the top 5 areas for non-compliance. The first area was actually procurement and contract management, and we indicated which entities and were actually didn't get it right, which is the department, the railway safety regulator, SACA, DLCA, SAMHSA, the ports regulator, AXA, SANRAL, and PRASA. Then the second bullet, which is the material misstatement. Now this is one that would mean that we've audited the financials and we picked up that there were errors in the financials. The entities and the departments are then able to correct the financials, and then this paragraph would then be included in our audit report, which said that there were material adjustments that were required to the financials to make it a fair presentation. Why do we include this? It's because the financials that should have been presented to us should have been free from any errors. So they would end up with an unqualified financial audit, but they would end up with a compliance paragraph. Then if we look at the next paragraph that would end up in the financial, in the audit report, is when we have unauthorized, irregular, pre-determined expenditure. That has been included in the financial statement of the entity. So should it be in on the face of their financials, then it would mean that they have not complied with laws and regulations, which then would be a non-compliant paragraph in our audit report. So that doesn't necessarily only mean that we've identified it. It would be that the department themselves have also included it in their financials, all the entities have included it. Then we also have a problem with the fact that consequence management is also an area that we would then have compliance paragraph included in terms of that, and then revenue management, which was at transfer. So I think that those are the areas that to us were the ones that led to the most problems in the compliance side. Then if we look at the status of internal control, which is the next slide, here we've identified areas that we say internal controls are actually those mechanisms that are put in place by the entities and the departments to ensure that they get the correct reporting and that they do things right. So the first level that we look at is there effective leadership? Is there proper record keeping? Is there daily and monthly control to ensure that we then have the proper outcome? And then the review and monitoring of compliance and risk management. And if you look at this, I'm not going to go into each entity over here, but if we look at it, we see at a snapshot that the leadership looks as if they're doing relatively what they should be doing. We have SAMHSA and CASA where we have a problem. In terms of the, if I can look at the purple block that says not addressed, in terms of the reports that were issued, these leadership and internal control statuses were not actually included in their audit report. That's why we're saying that they are not assessed at this point. So the others have all been assessed. Then if we look at proper record keeping, this is one of our areas of concern because we're only looking at five entities that are managing to get this correct. And then the review and monitoring of compliance, which is, again, only 14% are getting it right, and that's two audits. So if you just look at that, you'll see where the focus should really be placed. Risk management, they seem to, there are entities that need to look at this, but really if you look at the areas that are concerned, is your proper record keeping and review and monitoring of compliance. Then if we look at the assurance providers, here we look at, we started with senior management, they should be there, they should be ensuring that everything is done correctly. Then we're looking at the accounting officer or the accounting authority that is also there as an oversight. Then we look at the executive authority, internal audit, audit committee, and then going forward, in, for the members that were in portfolio committees in the past, there was always the portfolio committee evaluation as well as an assurance provider. This year, due to the fact that we are all new and we haven't had engagement and we haven't agreed with ourselves what the process would be, we did touch on it during our capacity building session where we said that this would be something that would be implemented going forward. You'll notice that the portfolio committee is not included this year. Again, if we look at where the major problems lie, we're looking at senior management and two entities are getting it right. And if you actually look at the whole picture, the assurance providers in general, the only one that really looks as if it might be doing something correct is the audit committee, which is sitting at 48%. But if you go back later and you take this back to the audit outcome, you'll see it has a good correlation with that as well, as to who's getting it right and who's not getting it right. In terms of the executive authority, we know that there we've had a number of executive authorities over the period, and we're now sitting with a new minister. So going forward, we will be working with him quite closely. And the internal audit is something that we also try to work with as well to be able to ensure that we cover all the risks. But if you look at the financial health and financial management side of it, here we're looking, basically this page is giving you the areas that are assessed. It's your revenue management, asset and liability management, and cash management. And if we look at it in totality, we're looking at quite a number of the entities might not be sitting with a total going concern problem, but they do have challenges. I know that the two entities that are the ones that are maybe in the press the most, as well as also in the financials, that look as if they really have got the challenges is the Road Accident Fund and then the SANROC. And I think that there we know that it's a liability in terms of the accidents that have occurred at Road Accident Fund and the number of claims that have been recovered. And then at SANROC, we also have the e-toll situation that's also had quite an impact. When we look at cash management going forward, some of the entities might have more of a challenge going forward. Again, with Arctia, we're looking at now with the rollout of the Arto app and how that would impact, and that basically Arctia would then need to put mechanisms in place to ensure that they can actually address those. Then if we look at the next slide, which is unauthorized expenditure, here it is only the department that can get unauthorized expenditure. And you'll note that last year they didn't have, this year they did have, and it was basically as a result of expenditure that was incurred that was not covered by the vote. So they incurred the expenditure, but they hadn't actually budgeted for it, and the back vote. So if we look at in 2016-17 was the last time that we actually had unauthorized expenditure prior to this, and that was relating to the Unitas contract, but that was also as required by a law order, by a court order, and then there was no investigation that needed to be required. But in terms of this unauthorized expenditure, the department and the DG are required to then actually carry out an investigation to ensure that it doesn't reoccur, as well as what happens and what steps need to be taken. Then we go to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which has shown basically that from 2017-18 it's grown from 86 million to 136 million. And if we look at the biggest contributor here in this year, it is basically related to AXA. And the cause of that with AXA was the fact that the South has gone and opened up and reassessing prior assessments that were done, and with that obviously comes the penalties on the interest, but AXA is in the process of challenging that. So that, but you know the policy is you need to pay South first and then you can take them on. So that's really basically in terms of the fruitless and wasteful. If we also look at the chart on the green and the red, we'll see that SAMHSA and PRASA are areas that have got fruitless and wasteful. And then we also have in the green slide the areas that needed to be investigated, that have been investigated. And on SAMHSA and PRASA, they have not as yet been investigated. So if you're looking at it in terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there should be investigations that take place, as well as in irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure. We need to determine what was the cause of it. So you'll notice that now, in terms of the Auditor General, we actually do look and see if there have been investigations and what were the outcomes of it, and were the outcomes then actually implemented. Then if we look at the irregular expenditure, over here we see, I think I need to state here that irregular expenditure, although it's incurred and happened, it doesn't necessarily mean that they've been bought. And it also doesn't mean that they didn't get the services. So if they were buying a car, they got a car, but they bought it from the incorrect sort of provide is basically what it comes down to. Should we identify fraud, then we would follow the normal process of reporting it, but that is not one of our key audit objectives at the moment, is to go and look for fraud, but we do investigate and we do look at compliance, and should we then identify it, then it would actually come out, and then we would refer it. And I think that when we come to the material irregularities, you'll see the process that is then taken. If we look at also the bars there that are on your right-hand side, again, the green are showing the entities and the department that have actually investigated. Then the areas that have not been investigated, where there was irregular expenditure and it hasn't been investigated, and then where there was no irregular expenditure that was incurred. And that is also very important to note, that if you want, if the entities want to get a clean audit, then they also need to ensure that there was no irregular, no fruitless and wasteful, and in the department's case, no unauthorised expenditure. Then we put down in the narrative on your left-hand side, we've actually put down a nature where we've indicated what the nature of price those ones were, which was competitive bidding that wasn't followed, procurement not in accordance with the triple PFA, and supply chain, contract prices exceeded, payment without contract, and non-compliance with SEN principles. At FANROL, it was also procurement with competitive, without competitive bidding, non-compliance with procurement processes, and non-compliance with legislation on contract access. It was also the non-compliance with the CIDV, and it was non-compliance with the preferential procurement policy, and non-compliance with the national treasury requirement. And I think that there, again, you can see the trend. It's very much the self-same thread that we're looking at in all the entities, and it basically comes down to the procurement and the compliance with the procurement policy. Because of that, we then go over to slide 21, where we actually then say, what were the problems with the supply chain management process? And most of them is, if we look at the most common finding, is we were not able to audit the procurement policy because there was missing or incomplete information. So this is where we don't get all the information to be able to follow the process, and that was a lot of that was found in ACTA and PRASA. Uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes, that is where they don't actually follow the policies and procedures as set out to ensure that we have the triple PS compliance. And then local content, here we also had the three audit teams that didn't comply with that, which was the department, Railway Safety Regulator and PRASA. So there we had a basic regression in terms of that. Then fraud and lack of consequence. So here we have the alleged allegations of financial and or fraud and SEM misconduct. So it doesn't only relate to fraud, it relates to the fact that there was financial misconduct. And here we look at the areas that were of concern. It was at ACSA, allegations were not investigated in the 17-18 year that had occurred, and DOT and PRASA, the investigations took longer than 3 months. The LCA, the investigations also took longer than 3 months. And then at PRASA, allegations were not necessarily properly investigated. So that would then talk to those bars at the top. Then, in terms of to improve the status of financial and performance management, here we, so how do we then also play a role in it? We have regular engagement where we engage with the accounting officer and the executive authorities, and then we assess the key controls, and this is done by means of a process called the status of records review. So what we do is we go along and we say, okay, these are the audit outcomes. Entity, what did you say you were going to commit to? Then we go in and we actually verify that if they said to us, for example, bank, if we found out that bank reconciliations weren't being carried out. Then we say to them, okay, give us a bank reconciliation, and we would then see that they have been carried out. If they haven't been done, then we know that they haven't complied with the action plan. And this we then immediately communicate with the accounting officers and with the accounting authorities. So we go to the top and we tell them, you know, that you've said that you've done this stuff, but you haven't done it. And if you haven't done it, the possibility is that your audit outcomes may very well be the same. We don't only do the status of records review in terms of entities that had problems. We also go in and we look at those that are key, because they could also now be getting areas that could lead to a regression. Then we have roadshows where the AG goes out and he then shares the audit outcomes with the general public, as well as with the ministers, and we have media briefings, and this happens every cycle. Then we also have frequent other kinds of engagements where we also engage with yourself. And then we also have the capacity building, and those sessions we've already, as Transport, we were lucky enough to be able to have that engagement prior to the actual engagement. Then at the last, at the capacity building, we also mentioned the fact that we've now got an expansion in our mandate in the Public Audit Act. And that then relates to the material irregularities, where the process is our auditors go out, they do the audit work, they identify a material irregularity, and then with that it gets then referred to public bodies for further investigation, because we are the audit body within South Africa for entities and departments do not necessarily have all the skills and capacities to be able to investigate that. Then there needs to be binding remedial action, and the AG then says, well, you know, you need to ensure there are certain things that are rectified in terms of the material irregularities. I mean, should this then not take place, then the issue, then we issue a document called a certificate of debt, in which the entities then become liable to actually pay back the amount. So you'll see that a lot of the boards and the accounting officers are quite stressed at this outcome at the moment. But in terms of the effect is that it's nothing really different to what the CSMA actually requires, and the CSMA did actually require that we would take remedial action. But now the remedial action that's now been brought into the Public Audit Act is the fact that we then have issued the certificate of debt. What is a material irregularity? Here we basically set out that it's a non-compliance or transgression of legislation. It could be fraud, theft, or the breach of fiduciary duty. And it's identified during our period that we're carrying our audit on. And the impact is that there would be financial loss, misuse or loss of material of public resources, and substantial harm to the public sector and the general public. So in terms of the commencement, which was on slide 26, we have it was implemented in the 1819 year for the first time. It was a phased-in approach. And the audit that was then selected in our business unit was the PRASA audit. And if you looked at the criteria that PRASA then actually met, was the audit items at that point was not clean, it was qualified, it had high irregular expenditure, and there was sufficient coverage across tiers of government and provinces. So I think that later on we will be able to, well, just on the next page, we'll be able to tell you what the outcome of this is. But in terms of the phase-in approach, we did, as we said, the one audit, and then going forward the office will then be deciding on further phasing in. Then the material irregularities identified at PRASA. Here it's on a high level, I will read those to you basically. It's the unfair procurement process for the purchase of the locomotive. It is a competitive bidding process not followed in the appointment of the general overhaul and upgrading contract that was investigated by the SIU, and that will be followed up in the new audit. Then there's unfair procurement processes followed in the appointment of the signalling contractors, unfair award of control of vegetation investigation to be implemented. Then this competitive bidding process was not followed provision of, in the provision of bus services in the Western Cape, provision of surveillance services, which is the drones, and the provision of security services. And this will also be investigated and it will be followed up by our audit team. Then uncompetitive process followed in the awarding of the supply and delivery of signalling equipment, repair and replacement of signalling equipment, and again this is going to be investigated and it will be followed up. Where we're currently sitting in the stage of the material irregularity process is that the audit has been conducted, we've identified these areas, now the recommendations would need to be appropriately actioned and then the necessary disciplinary steps and consequence management would then need to be taken. So I think that that's in a nutshell where we are in the process. And I know that when we look at the audit items, we know what was really the cause of where we're sitting and what the portfolio as a whole looks like. And when we looked at this, we then identified the key areas that we as the office can see would, if these areas were improved, then we would have a better outcome. We should have a better outcome. Is there were key officials that lacked appropriate competencies. There were instability or vacancies in key positions, and I think that this is really one of the biggest contributors, even though we're sitting at six entities that it was problematic with, but you'll notice that has got worse from the last year. There were inadequate consequence or poor management of performance or management of those that transgress, and then there was slow and no response to improving key controls. But I think that if we look at this and we break it down, if we don't have the people in the position, then we're not going to have the corrective actions put in place, we're not going to necessarily have the skills because people are going to be acting. So I think they're all very much interlinked and interrelated to each other. So, and the eventual impact is that it will impact if we have these vacancies and we have lack of people with lack of skill, it's going to actually eventually end up in inefficiencies in the service delivery that's required. Then if we actually have a breakdown of where the instability and the vacancies were, we had instability, and then you can look at it in terms of where the problems were with our audit outcomes. Trotto, we had instability at executive management, the chief executive officer, the group financial officer, the chief information officer, and there were those vacancies. If we look at the executive management, that was at AXA and RAS, we had instability there, as well as the chief executive officer and chief financial officer, all being held by acting in an acting capacity. Then at RAS we had a interim board as well, and I think there's a lot of entities that have had boards that have been extended and extended over a period because their terms have come to an end, which also then is a challenge. Then at SAMHSA, we haven't had a CEO there since May 2017. The CFO was only appointed during the year, in the mid part of the year that he actually reviewed. At driving license, we've had an acting head for quite a while. They don't have a permanent CFO, they've got an acting person, and they've also got a person that's acting as their risk officer. Then at the Department of Transport, we didn't have a Director General for a long period. That was actually since July 2016, and there's been a number of that acting DGs that have been in the project. We now do have a new DG that was appointed from the 1st of August, but it was obviously post our audit period, so the impact of that would be noted in the current year. And then also there were a number of DDG positions, the Deputy Director General positions that were vacant. Then we've been asked as well, what would our recommendations be? So basically to the department and to the entities, we are saying they need to have permanent boards, which would then assist them, and then they would need to ensure that they get the proper capacitated management in place. We need executive management positions need to be filled with the appropriately skilled people. Then they need to have action plans that actually address the audit outcomes and our findings so that we can then have a better audit outcomes going forward. And they need to have consequence management that needs to be implemented. Then to yourself, as the portfolio committee, we are saying that what we are suggesting is that there is monitoring and regular follow-up with the executive authority on the appointments that have taken place at board levels to ensure that the mechanisms are put in place to actually have the proper oversight at these entities. Then also that the entities and the departments need to come back and indicate how they're managing the vacancies and the processes they put in place in their actual management structures that there's been vacancies in. Also that you get regular feedback on the progress of the action plans that they've put into place so that you can have an understanding of what the impact will be on the current year, as well as the fact that they need to show that there's been a culture of consequence management that has actually been implemented in the portfolio as a whole. And then this should actually then drive a better audit outcomes and a better oversight over the transport portfolio as a whole. Thank you very much.
Well, there it is, honorable members. We shall have to allow the team from the Office of the Auditor General to vacate this place around 5 to 11, so that we give the chair to say something for that 5 minutes. Okay. Normally, this is not our entity. As you all know, but earlier this morning I had a chat with them, and out of their own volition, I must say, they requested that I should convey this message to honorable members that they will be giving us a questionnaire in order for us to give our view or opinion in terms of how they discharge their work. And I said to them, wow, so for the first time you'll hear from us, because we have been hearing from you all the time. So it means government is trying to open up and become transparent. So we'll be having that kind of a questionnaire, and I'm sure we'll fill that questionnaire fairly and say what needs to be said about them, because we want them to know what we think about them, so that they can, where they need to up their game, they should do so. Well, we need to congratulate them, we should do so. Okay. maybe I should allow time for members, depending on how many members will be speaking. If we are all going to be speaking, it means that the two questions rule or 3 minutes is going to apply. If we have few, it's just a matter of time. Let me see an indication of how many members wants to speak. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 4, 2, 4, 6, 4, 7. Okay. It means let's try to keep our 3 minutes. Let me start here with the honorable member.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, also for the handouts. I would like to start off with a question around the expansion of mandate, because I have the impression that over the number of years that the audit process is rather compliance-driven opposed to service delivery-driven. So therefore, a question around the necessity but also urgency then to expand the mandate. Now, you presented on slide 6, 5 legs of the current criteria, which I would immediately want to suggest need to be expanded to a 6th leg, suggesting that service delivery should be part of that. Because the underlying simple question that we often get addressed with is how much, and shall I rather say, how much less of every rand at the end of the day ends up with public benefit. And when I look at what you described as getting it right, and I'm referring to a clean audit, on the slide you suggested that one entity in particular that got it right was CBRTA. In previous years, entities like only this year they didn't, but for the past 4 or 5 years they did achieve a clean audit, which was the port regulator as well, as two entities as examples of who supposedly got it right. On the other hand, those are two entities that really pose extreme fiscal risk, yet you present them here as two entities that got it right, which just underscores the flaw in the criteria in looking at it in a way of compliance instead of service delivery and being financially successful. My second point, I would like your comment on the necessity about expanding the mandate to also then include what I try to argue for in favor of a service delivery component. The second point and question is around irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Now, my impression and information that I could get hold of is that 1% of irregular expenditure, the money has been recovered, 3% has been condoned or authorized, and 8% written off, which ends up with something like close to 90%, in fact 89%, not dealt with. When we look at the category unauthorized expenditure, 80% is not dealt with. When we look at fruitless and wasteful expenditure amongst entities, 80% is not dealt with. Now this talks of a build-up over years, and we are running the risk in terms of future presentations that these would go into the 90%. It's fine to report on that. But what are we doing about it? This build-up certainly can't just keep on building up. What is the progressive steps in addressing that? My last question is around leadership management and the executive and accounting authorities. Now, the current situation is that amongst the 12 main entities, we've got 54 vacancies. And I would like to hear your comments around efficiency and effectiveness of leadership, executive as well as accounting authority in light of these 54 vacancies. But then in more particular ways, because your function to a large extent analyzes the correctness opposed to legislation and legal framework. And I would like to hear your comment around the continuation of interim appointments and boards, but also acting appointments and boards, and then also now extended appointments and boards. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Good morning, colleagues. Mine was also on the expansion of the mandate. I think I've been largely covered by my colleague here, Chris Anthony. I think maybe just to emphasize on the point that my colleague was arguing for, you find that in terms of the framework or of the reporting framework that the entities or any entity of government get from Treasury and from HSA. I'm very proud that they have complied with everything. They tick all the boxes, green for everything. But then if I, okay, let me make an example with the municipality. Municipality, they get a municipal infrastructure grant. And then in terms of ITP, what they're supposed to do in that financial year, they tick all the boxes, they report, you give them the green light, them comply, everything is fine. But you find that there's no water in that municipality. And in terms of the ITP, they're supposed to build, water infrastructure and all of those things. So the framework as well needs to stop being compliance driven, but needs to take into account terms of service delivered on the ground. But also one other thing is, in terms of you say here that all material irregularities are reported to state institutions for further investigation. Now my question there is, so one would think perhaps you would send it to the depending on the nature of it, say maybe you send it to the Hawk for investigation. How often do you get any feedback from the said investigation? Mm-hmm. And also, in terms of the outcome, you know, obviously that depends on the said institution that is making the investigation. But also, the outcome that you get, say, miraculously you get an outcome, but the point I'm trying to drive is, you find that some state institutions are so hamstrung to the point that they can't, even if you refer the issues to them, they can't conclude the investigation in time that will have a material impact in terms of affecting service delivery positively and for the entity correcting what they are supposed to be doing. Isn't there a need that perhaps you guys, because here you say that you are also taking binding remedial action, that you can also expand on it, maybe give it some motive as well, over and above you referring the issues to other state entities, where you can really actually hold them to account. Lastly, the issue of certificate of death. My immediate thinking is, an entity says that they are debt-free, they are managing their finances positively, and obviously that would, so if you issue a certificate of debt, would that impact on the ability of the entity to go on to the financial market to borrow or to get cash injection, or say maybe to go on to the bond market or anything like that? Would a certificate of debt have those consequences or not? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We understand that you are a Chapter 9 institution. Some question actually that doesn't fall to your mandate. But only few questions that I need to understand from you, because the recreation that is happening in SAMHSA, CLASA, and HSA actually has been happening years. So I'm trying to check your recommendation when you recommended to the department Do you get some feedback from the department about their consequences management and their input on how are they managing this entity? And the last and third question is this one of I'm worried about this, about your recommendation. But because when you take your recommendation to the full committee, the bullet one, when you are saying appointment of permanent board members, I'm trying to check why these recommendations are not in the department. Why I'm referring this recommendation to the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, morning, colleagues. Well, mine, very few questions, if any, but allow me to lament, purely because it's my first term in Parliament. First term I'm getting this, and I'm trying to derive value out of this, and I'm not getting it. I'm not getting empowered at all. My colleague first started there by saying it looks like it's a compliance process, which I fully agree with. I think we are ticking a box. We should be saying thank you, we've heard you, we will see you next time. Because we are politicians, we are representing people. We want to follow where the money is it spent well, and is there an impact on the road? An example, he mentioned the CBRTA issue, which I concur to. You mentioned in one of your findings on your sample of SCM an illegally awarded contract of buses within the Western Cape. Now, I'm not sure now as you are writing it, because most of the things is, I know it's summarized, whether in PRASA particularly you looked at the rail component and not at the element of autopex, for instance, intersize, because that bus component I would assume would have been awarded under autopex. And if you look at autopex alone, and hence I was battling to find, am I going to hear another audit report about autopex or not? It's a litany. In fact, it's like a graveyard, to put it more simply, but nothing is coming out of this report. Now, I'm not sure whether I'm asking the right people or should expect it somewhere else. The other issue you highlight, identification of fraud, I think is under your material something like that. You know that English. Material irregularities. You talk about irregularity and you talk about the impact, which is what I said when we had a capacitating. You say impact is a material financial loss, and this is where we are very interested. And here, in this entity, particularly PRASA, that is where the problem is. There is serious material loss. But if you go and look at your recommendation, being a Chapter 9 institution, the question is then what? You have told us then what? You know, you say the misuse or loss of material public resource or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. That is exactly at the heart of what is happening at PRASA. Last week I had the privilege of attending a rail safety regulator conference. You see the number of people that are dying and maimed in our trains and everything. That is the direct impact that you are raising here. Again, there's an audit, there's nothing, then what? How do I go back to my constituents and say, how have I exercised that oversight? So, lastly, Chair, on FCM, you say there's a regression of 69% of the auditees. And if I look at what you wrote and how you come to the percentages, it's roughly 10 of the entities of Department of Transport. Then what? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you very much for your presentation. I've got only two questions. under the status of internal control and assurance provided, there was no assessment done at AT&S and Ford's regulator. Can you expand on that? And then in on slide 28 on the root causes, the key officials lack appropriate competencies. There were two of them. Could you expand who they are and what positions they occupy, please? Thank you.
Matelon. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, my colleagues have said what I wanted to say, but let me just indicate that my understanding was that when AG is saying there is fruitless expenditure, you will be able to say in this entity, not clubbing them together, because we are going to interact with this entity. And they indicated that they met the entities, they discussed with them. So now if they're saying there is fruitless expenditure, wasteful expenditure, and then they club them together, we don't understand. We are just seeing, or in this entity, there is this challenges. So we were expecting that you would be able to say in RSR, because their main role is to make sure that there is safety in the rain. So now, like what my colleague has said, so we're expecting, Ori, when you are saying RSR, there is this thing, why, and because you did interacted with them. But it's not there. You are just clubbing them together that these entities are having fruitless expenditure, this one not being specific. That's all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity to express an opinion on the presentation. Let us just welcome the presentation by the AGSA. And let me first begin by highlighting, and I think it's a minuscule oversight on slide number 19. The heading says it's got two expenditures to begin with, and it says decrease over 2 years. However, the content speaks of an increase on the slide. So 2017-18 is 86.6 million, 2018-19 is 136.1, but the heading seems to be misleading. It says decrease over 2 years. With the avoidance of being pedantic, I would say these are some of the details that we would look into as we look into certain of these slides and how meticulous the AG would be in presenting certain facts to us. I am also worried about the length of time investigations take. I have seen that in many of the instances you would say investigations took long, and I would want to know what is the impact, the material impact of investigations taking too long within the context of law. And I ask this question within the framework of consequence management. How many people then get away with the equivalent of murder, even to use that language? Because an investigation took too long, it went over bounds in terms of what is prescribed by law, the impact thereof to the public. Remember, we sit here at the behest of the public, we are elected representatives of the public. So in the public interest, we would want to know what that impact is and what can be done from our level. We know you don't account to this committee, but what can be done to hold the AGSA accountable for taking investigations too long that then allow people to get scot-free from misusing public funds that are supposed to get to where they are supposed to get. I just want to understand the impact of investigations taking too long and some of the investigations not happening at all. Because I would see in some of your slides there are certain percentages that relate to actual entities that are left untouched or unattended, and that has a financial impact on what is delivered at the end of the spectrum to the public. It seems the supply chain management, irregular and fruitless expenditure, unfair awards and procedural awards seem to be the problem. In the recommendations that you provide, where you find such, what are the recommendations that you usually make to remediate those problems? And I seem to see that these are perennial problems that are unending. Over a period of 5 years, it seems you would have the same problem recurring interchangeably between agencies and entities. What is it that is to be done to remediate this problem with the new mandate that you've been given and the teeth that you've now received from legislation? Let me pause there.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is, what is the reason for the delay in appointing permanent board and audit committees? And my second one is, we've got the Auditor General and we all know we are doing very good work, but what about the internal audit units? Do you really think they are effective enough, seeing as there's still so many corruption cases? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to everyone. I also welcome the report. We will be seeing and saying the same thing, but I will not repeat what my colleagues have raised. But I have thought that you would, when dealing with performance plans, you will include the transformation and empowerment. And also nothing is said about job creation. And also, I would have expected you to quantify the impact of wasteful expenditure to service delivery. And my major concern is the supply chain management processes, you know, in all the entities. It is something that you need to look at. And remember, one colleague also mentioned that when you are presenting this report, you must always keep in mind that you are dealing with politicians and make sure that you cover everything. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In proper English, it is said that if the head is sick and the whole body is affected with sores, my first thing would be, is the Auditor General having the tooth or teeth to bite? Does he have powers? Or is he coming with the officials to just give us the report as it is? Because this is the continuation of corruption in many areas. Under fruitless and wasteful expenditure, further explanation is needed in this regard, Auditor General, and those implicated should be brought to book, because this is tantamount to corruption and it impacts negatively on service delivery. Then under credible financial report, performance report, I realize that there is 2017-2018 and 2018-2019. Is this not a carbon copy or cut and paste, as I see? Why is the graph not always stable? Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
So this is cost saving to have only one mic shared amongst ourselves. Oh, so the office of the Auditor General has another mic. Okay, let me allow the office of the Auditor General to remark on the questions or clarity seeking questions. Be free. Tell us your role. Give us our role in terms of your understanding. You have that opportunity to do so. Leave 5 minutes for me for the comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks very much, Honorable Members, for your valuable questions. And as I said earlier, we'll be taking turns in answering them. And I think most of the questions will, you know, come out as we deal with respective roles, you know, amongst all role players, including ourselves, the entity, the department, the National Treasury, and so forth. So I'm going to start with a question about the expansion of the mandate. I think Honorable Singer spoke about, you know, the importance of the mandate or the expansion there of dealing with the issue of service delivery. I think it is a very important point to note. I think the feedback I can give at this stage is that as you have highlighted in terms of the description in the definition of an MI, the intention is to deal with aspects of service delivery as well. And we have indicated that the mandate came into effect only, or the expansion of the mandate came into effect on the 1st of April, which means that most of the work of the Auditor General as a result of the, you know, amended mandate or the expanded mandate will obviously kick in with this outcome that we shared on Plaza as a selection. But we'll see a lot more as we, you know, report back to this committee going forward. We have started, you know, putting resources like, you know, engineers, performance auditors, so that we look deeper into some of our aspects of the mandate to make sure that if there is harm to general public, if there is, you know, some non-compliance that impacts service delivery, we are able to also express that in number to show the impact thereof. The issue of you know, you spot on, Honourable Singer, in terms of the, you know, 89% of irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure that has not been dealt with, and this is an issue that has been, you know, of concern to us. Again, in the past, our responsibility was mainly to report on, you know, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful, as well as unauthorized. And in terms of, you know, the PFMA, there are specific requirements for accounting officers, accounting authority, to deal specifically with irregular expenditure, with consequence management. And that is the area that has not really taken off in the past. And as part of the mandate now, we are now responsible, unlike in the past, to enforce the responsibility of the accounting officers and the accounting authorities in, you know, carrying out their responsibilities in terms of those section 38 as well as section 51. So at the end of it, the key issue here is that there has not been consequences for wrongdoing. Hence, you know, the same action can be repeated over and over again because there is no harm to those who are found wanting in, you know, transgressing the law. So we have now, with effect from the 1st of April, the responsibility to, you know, take on the accounting officers and accounting authorities who are not doing their bit. And as we report now on the, as we reported on the Plaza material irregularities, those that we've reported, which are about 9 or so, are now going to be part of this process where it can no longer be, you know, out of the mercy of those in charge to execute. So they will have to follow the process that will be outlined by law. So the issue of interim and acting arrangement, again, this is a key deterrent to consequence management.
And we are seeing it a lot in entities like Praza, AXA, and so forth. Because, for example, there will be issues that are put on the table as a result of non-compliance. Let's say a particular board starts running with consequence management, they start to put a process in place, they start to bring certain people on board, but then in a short while, then that interim moves on to do other things, a new board comes in place, they start all over. They don't necessarily pick up from the previous board, they start with their new priorities and so forth. So I think this is one of the key issues, hence we have a dedicated slide where we deal with this concern around people who are acting or who are in interim arrangement, because it is definitely not a sustainable solution. Honourable Member, I think you were spot on in terms of dealing with the issue of the framework, because in terms of how we provide an assurance role, and the issue around what exactly service delivery, how service delivery must be dealt with, at this stage is best dealt with through annual performance plans. So in other words, we are seeing a lot of targets in the annual performance plans of these entities which do not necessarily deal with service delivery aspect to start with. So one of the recommendations that we'll make is to say when the entities and the department come and table their annual performance plans, this is the area which is best suited. Members can obviously hammer on the issues of the significance of that which is reported in the annual performance plan. Because in terms of the framework now, what we ought to be doing is to then take the framework and carry out the responsibility of checking whether that which they promised in the annual performance plan can be supported with audit evidence so that the annual performance report can be used for decision making, for use for interrogations and so forth. So if in the first place what they have put in as their targets are not tangible, significant, impactful matters, so by the time we come in from an audit perspective, we are just basically looking at that which was approved in the first place in the annual performance plan. I think you raised the issue of the certificate of debt. The certificate of debt is meant to really be the last resort in terms of deterring those who are charged with or those who are not carrying out their responsibilities. In other words, at this stage, it has only been the issue of reporting and then hoping that actions get taken. Now what the expanded mandate says is that the Auditor General will come and put in remedial actions which are binding. So if anyone is given those remedial actions, they can only reverse those through the court process. So it's only the court that can turn the decision of the Auditor General around. If therefore that accounting officer or accounting authority doesn't come on board to execute on the remedial action, then the Auditor General now has the responsibility to then quantify the impact of that or lack of action thereof. If money were to be recovered, for example, for locomotives that were not of the right spec, so the Auditor General has the responsibility to then say, accounting officer, accounting authority, you were meant to deal with this issue, you did not deal with this issue, therefore the expenditure that has been incurred by the entity will now have to be recovered from yourself. So that's the impact of the certificate of debt. In short, it is not an instrument that will be used to raise funds and so forth by the entity. I think I'm going to pause there to allow my colleagues to deal with the other questions, and we can deal with any residual if there are any.
Thank you. Good morning, honourable members. I think as an audit office, we were an evolving institution, and I think at the end of the day, we would like to empower you more, I think, as honourable members, so that you can be able to exercise your role. I think the comments about the content in terms of our slides, I think are noted. And we will improve, I think, as the time goes by and as we get to know in terms of what is expected from the members. But I think one of the most important things I think that was asked is, I think in terms of what is it that we look into. I think at PRASA we look both RAID as well as the AutoPEX bus services. And I think the material regularity that we highlighted there is basically here in the Western Cape about, I think PRASA is using one of the bus services companies here to transport, I think, the drivers, I think, of the trains, you know, when they are working late. But the challenge that we had with that contract is that it's an evergreen contract. I think it was entered into 2005, you know. So, and there was no competitive bidding process that was done. And we believe then that there may be material financial loss that may be incurred there. However, the board of PRASA then has promised us then that we're going to execute an investigation onto that particular process, and also they will institute also consequence management if they've identified those that have transgressed the law. I think Sony has actually highlighted the issue of the objectives of the material irregularity process in terms of what is it that we aspire also to achieve, because we really want to talk to the service delivery issues there, and we really would want to cover them. But also it's important to note that our mandate in terms of the Public Audit Act is still to ensure that we audit financial statements, annual performance reports, as well as compliance with legislation. And also what we would want also to ensure then that we also achieve is to empower you on the financial management of these entities. And when the entities then are coming, then they will expand more also on service delivery, in terms of the service delivery aspect of the work. I think there's also been questions about the issues of transformation. I think Sony also is covered in terms of things. I think issues of transformation as well, the most important thing is to ensure them that they are actually captured in the service delivery documents of the OTs, like your annual performance plan. And then on our side, then our role then is to audit whether then that is being done. And then we can come and report whether maybe there's a service delivery or not, in terms of then the target then that are set by the members. I think there was another question about why are we recommending the appointment of under the recommendation. I think there's a recommendation that we made there that talks to appointment of permanent board. I think our honourable members is to recommend that you make a follow up with the minister, as well as you know, to ensure them that the minister, because the minister has responsibility to appoint permanent bonds. But we were recommending that as you are performing your oversight responsibilities, to remind the minister of the importance of appointing the permanent board. We are not necessarily making that to be your responsibility. I think also there's been a lot of instability at the transport portfolio as well. I think in terms of, because there was a question about what are the reasons for the delays in the appointment of boards and executive management. I think there's been a lot of changes of ministers, I think also in the transport portfolio as well. And also that had a negative impact as well in terms of continuity, because another minister is going to come in. And then when the appointment is being made, maybe before
before the appointment is being made, maybe the minister is going to change, and then a new one is going to come, then he's going to start the process from scratch again. Hence, then they ended up appointing interim boards, some appointed interim boards, and that also actually exacerbated the instability as well. I think there was also a question in terms of the assessment of internal controls, why the port regulator as well as the air traffic navigation services in the internal controls were not assessed. Those were, we didn't assess them because the air traffic navigation services, we don't audit it ourselves. So we're not there 24/7. In terms of then the Public Audit Act, that audit is a Section 43 audit, meaning that we opted not to audit, it's audited by a private firm. So they just gave us input in terms of what the audit outcomes are. But we do not necessarily then assess the internal controls on that one. And then the post regulator is really a very small entity. It's a small entity. It doesn't have a lot of activities that are happening there. So we classify it as a small auditee. So small auditees, we don't assess them, the internal control. I think one of the things, I think there are a lot of questions about irregular expenditure, fraud and waste expenditure, and maybe it's been happening over the years. I think the most frequent question that came is why these are still happening. And I think the answer is simple. There's a culture of no consequences. I think that is it. There's no consequence management. The people, they transgress the law. There's no response from the boards, from the accounting officers to implement consequence management. And even though the PSMA is very clear, because the PSMA is very clear in terms of what the accounting officer or the DG should do in terms of Section 38, and also what the boards of the public entities should do in terms of Section 51. So we also then, I think the expanded mandate on our side is going to give us then more powers then to actually enforce the accounting officer or the accounting or the board to implement consequence management. I think that is basically then on our side one of the instruments then that we're going to be able to use. We are hopeful then that we're going to see a decrease in fruit and vegetable expenditure. I think my colleague is going to talk about, I think there was a question on the which entities in the key officials that are lacking appropriate competencies, in terms of which entities. My colleague then can deal with that question.
Well, I'm trying to manage time so that the Office of the Auditor General can also know that this portfolio committee is very good on that. We just request, if it's possible, those responses made in writing because of time constraints. Otherwise, I wish to say something before you leave. Please allow me to do that. Thank you very much. We have not caucused as members, but I can tell you that the question, most of the questions you raised, I raised in the chair. And I was made to understand that the guide in terms of what to audit and so forth is not the Office of the Auditor General that comes with them. It is treasure. And we have agreed that we need a session so that we get to these details that members have talked about, because that was also my concern. That rather than ticking the boxes, let's get to the point where we see the rent and the sense benefit our people. So I'm sure we'll have a session to deal with those things, but I think we should raise also these things with treasure. When I was saying on Sandra,
what is the issue? We understand PRASA and SAMHSA. Those are our bases that we must deal with. But SAMHSA has got an unqualified report, am I correct? Ne? But there's an issue with SANRAL of about 490 million that did not go through a proper bidding process. As I look at my notes, And at the end, the Office of the Auditor General commends SANRAL for the unqualified report. So I was thinking in my head, how does this happen? Maybe in terms of percentage, because that's what you normally say. In terms of the percentage, this 419 million rand is maybe a very small percentage. 490 million rand. The understanding is that SANRAL has ticked almost all the boxes in order for it to get an unqualified report. We should go to Treasury, deal with this matter, because these are our matters of government that are given to this Chapter 9 institution. I think what I want to say at this point is that my other understanding is that they are relying on us as a portfolio committee on many issues that members are saying, why are you recommending this to us? Remember, we are a portfolio committee that has to oversee the MPPs by the department. It is our duty that where the department does not tick the boxes that they would say, they would have said they will tick, it is us and only us who will say, you have not ticked 1, 2, 3, come. Let's see. And I think we'll get that opportunity on Thursday to say that. So on that note, you have heard what members are saying about you. That questionnaire must come. And when we have time to sit down, then we'll see how best. Can we have a formidable team that will deal with this issue that are recommended to us and the information that the Office of the Auditor General is having? I think it will be fair at this stage and time to say to you, we are going to support you. We are going to be with you. We will learn from you. Where we are not happy, you can see I have a capable team that can say it as it is. And we will continue doing that. But let's build a capable team to change South Africa, not to deep boxes. Wishing you the best of the day. Let's meet. We are a team, we are here. We can't wish each other away. We must coexist and move forward. Thank you. The honourable member was raising an issue about the train in the Western Cape. He's not referring in any way to any one of us. It's just that the incident happened in Western Cape. So it's not a delivery issue. Yeah. Members, we still have a... Yeah. The honourable member is from Eastern Cape, eh? Oh. No, I think we are done with Auditor General. We have a very hectic day ahead of us. Let's formulate space to interact fruitfully so that we don't abuse it. Thank you very much. So you are liberated. Unless you really want, you love this committee and you want to be with the committee. Otherwise, you are liberated. We have a hectic day ahead of us. We are here up until 10:30. And Mehdi, I like to see a white man next to me. You want to grab a cup of tea, otherwise call the next what is this? RFR. Maybe? Hey, maybe. Come, sit here next to me. Huh? Let's have tea, let's have coffee, let's have cake. Those of you who want to gain some more weight, please gain some more weight.